One evening 50 years ago, I sat in a farmhouse living room with a group of aspiring young writers. There was a stranger in our midst, a visitor from England, a celebrated poet. He was famous in the way that poets are famous, meaning well known in literary circles but completely unknown to the general public. His name was Stephen Spender, and we were in awe of him, but he seemed perfectly at ease, happy to sit in front of the fireplace sipping wine while we went around the room sharing poems we had written. Spender gave each of us his full attention. When it came his turn to share something he had written, he took out a book from his Oxford bag, opened it to a page, and read a poem that began with these words: "I think continually of those who were truly great." I was lost immediately. Instead of listening, I went down the rabbit hole and started thinking of great, famous, important people, and how I had seen this very poem in the anthologies. And here was a famous poet reading his famous poem to me, which meant I was practically famous myself. In other words, I completely missed the point, a skill I have not lost. It has taught me to be patient with myself because I usually get it sooner or later. "I think continually of those who are truly great," he began. And seeing his words again half a century later, it's finally obvious to me that he wasn't talking about politicians and celebrities. He wasn't talking about people who turn into statues or get their faces put on money. And he was certainly not saying, "Look at me, how great I am." It was more like, "Look at you, gathering in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, encouraging one another in a world that could care less about poetry." The truly great do not make the rest of us look small. They do not exalt themselves at our expense. They lift us up, and we may not even know their names or what they have done for us. The truly great are those who are most true to themselves and to our common humanity, and who simply will not allow the light we all have within us to go out. In short, they carry the flame. I learned only this morning that 50 years after hearing Stephen Spender read this poem, I have joined a church who has this very poem in the back of their songbook, the Gray Songbook. How's that for awe? And I will put a link on our Facebook group to a video of Stephen Spender reading this poem so he can hear it in his own voice.
So what kinds of things evoke a sense of awe in you? And how does awe make you feel? The strongest, most significant experience I have had of awe was about 20 years ago when I was kayaking at sunset in the San Juan Islands. Black velvet mountains silhouetted against a sky awash in reds, oranges, pinks, and purples. The water reflected it all so that I was scooping up color as I paddled. The kayak carrying me so low on the surface of the water, it was as if I was swimming through it, swimming through brilliant watercolor sky ocean. It was like being subsumed into a luscious painting, melding into earth, water, sky. There was a sense of letting go, My chest expanded, my body relaxed, my heart opened. Wow. As you have likely noticed in your own awe experiences, there's that strange paradoxical thing that happens. You feel small and insignificant in the face of something vast. But the insignificance does not make you feel worthless or alone. Your self nearly vanishes, but it is at the same time held, because in the vanishing, the separation between you and not you fades, and you become connected, a part of the larger whole. You feel held and thus somehow comforted, valuable. You are a glimmering golden thread woven in the fabric of all that is. That kayak experience was a long time ago. This month's theme made me search my experience for more recent experiences of awe. I was particularly intrigued to see if I could find examples that were not related to being in nature. As I pondered, I realized that every time I write a eulogy for a memorial service, I have felt awe. When I write a eulogy, I don't just talk about the things I appreciate about the person, a list of character attributes. I give a kind of an outline of the person's life story. The outline serves as a sort of a framework, a pencil sketch that then gets filled in with color and texture as with every memory that is shared later in the service by friends and family. Telling someone's life story from beginning to end is a humbling experience. Each life is so rich, so textured, so complex. Each human has had their own particular challenges, worked through their own particular struggles. In the midst of it all, each human has also managed to build relationships and create things, projects, events, work, a song sung with a congregation. Each human has touched other humans and our web of life in ever-widening circles. I am inevitably in awe of each person I've ever eulogized. To be clear, they are not extraordinary people, right? They are ordinary people, regular people, humans doing the best they can to get through the ups and downs of life. And that moves me every time. The struggle, the strength, the getting through it. This is a bit of a paradox, too, like the one David alluded to, how an ordinary human can also be great. How the humble striving of an ordinary flawed human can be awe-inspiring. And just as being awed in nature can make you feel both small and connected to the larger web of life, I find that being awed by a singular human story can make me feel less self-involved and more connected with the larger circle of humanity. Every month, I meet with the facilitators of our Soul Matters theme exploration groups. This month, when we were sharing our experiences and insights about awe, I shared with them those two examples, awe in nature, kayaking at sunset, and awe in writing eulogies, awe at the struggle and striving of a singular, ordinary human life. One of the group members observed, "Well, that makes sense. The things you find awe-inspiring are a reflection of you. You like nature and you like people." It's true. Moreover, both are a reflection of my theology, my understanding of spirituality. If spirituality is a sense of being connected to something larger than oneself, then I find that spirituality in connection with human community and in connection with the web of life that holds us all. It's an interesting question. What do your experiences of awe say about you? And what do your experiences of awe say about your theology? or your spirituality. I wanted to give you the chance to listen to one another's experiences and insights. Here we go. She's doing it again. In a moment, not yet, but in a moment, I'm going to invite you to share with your neighbor your own answers to these questions. What inspires in you a sense of awe? What kinds of things make you say, wow? Share one example, one experience of awe, big or small, recent or long ago. And then I'm also giving you bonus questions. What do your experiences of awe say about you? And what do they say about your theology or spirituality? As we've done in the past, you can pair up in twos or threes. Not yet. Remember, please, to look around for people who are not paired up. If you cannot find a pair, come into the aisles and look for other people who can't find a pair, or indicate to an usher and they can help. You can, of course, pass and use this time for personal reflection. You may wish to consider, though, that even if you don't feel like you have anything to say, you can still listen to someone else. If you are hard of hearing, you can still share your story. Others can listen to you. If you are paired with someone who is hard of hearing, our ushers, Pat, Molly, and Francis, can give you paper and pencils so you can write down your answers for your partner. Let's do that bit first. If you know you have a hard time hearing an ambient noise like I do, go ahead and raise your hand now so the ushers can bring you. So one up here. And so remember, the pencil and paper goes to the partner of that person. Yeah, thank you. You will have about 5 minutes total. Are there any questions? Okay, let's go. Begin. Well done. In the Soul Matters material, there were some fascinating articles about research on the science of awe. Who knew they were doing this? Much of which was coming out of the Greater Good Project at the University of California at Berkeley. Preliminary studies, including one that tracks chemical messengers in the immune system, are suggesting that awe is good for our health and sense of well-being. In fact, the immune system study found that awe is particularly strong, even more effective than other positive emotions like contentment, love, or pride. Awe is good for society as well. First of all, awe tends to help us see ourselves in less individualistic terms. Dr. Dotcher Keltner describes one study in which participants filled in the blank of the phrase, I am. I am. They filled in the same phrase with different answers 20 times. Half of them did so while standing before an awe-inspiring replica of a T-Rex skeleton. The other half filled out the phrases in the exact same place but oriented to look down a hallway away from the T-Rex. Dr. Kelter reports, those looking at the dinosaur were more likely to define their individual selves in collectivist terms, as a member of a culture, a species, a university, a moral cause. That is, they saw themselves as connected to and a part of a larger whole. Furthermore, experiences of awe can prompt us to be kinder to others. For example, in a study, participants each looked up for 60 seconds. Half of them looked up at trees, the tallest eucalyptus grove in North America. And the other half turned 90 degrees, looked up at a science building nearby. As expected, those who looked at the trees reported experiencing more awe. When the researcher pretended to accidentally drop a box of pens, those who had experienced the awe-inducing trees were more actively helpful. They picked up more pens than the people who were looking at the science building. Other studies consistently show that people who are exposed to awe-inspiring things are subsequently more generous and more thoughtful of others. One of the lead awe researchers, Paul Piff, suggests that seeking and creating opportunities for awe works against the societal trend towards narcissism, selfishness, and the us-them divide that gives rise to hatred and violence. Piff explains that awe gives rise to a sense of self that is smaller, humbler, and connected to the greater whole. Feeling connected to that larger whole, our individual self-interest recedes, and we are more likely to care for others and the collective good. So awe is good for us, for our individual health, for our collective well-being. How might we seek it out? We can't order it on Amazon. It doesn't come when we call it. Especially when life gets difficult, it can be hard to look at life with that open-hearted sense of wonder. And yet, you know the kinds of things that have brought you awe in the past. Music or art or trees, whatever it is for you. And even smaller moments of awe can still be good for our souls. I find myself drawn to light in darkness. As a teenager in Los Angeles, I would seek out views of city lights from hilltop perches. The valley, a vast carpet of pinpoint twinkling, stretching out for miles. We said miles down there, not kilometers. The lights of the Pacific Coast Highway hugging the curves of the shore alongside a black ocean. In Victoria, I'm drawn to the nighttime lights of the Inner Harbor, those lit-up outlines of the Parliament buildings and the blue lights of the Johnson Street Bridge. I seek out the full moon, fireplaces, candles. At Halloween, I love the moment when we turn out the lights to see the jack-o'-lantern glow. There's a little song I sing to it every year. Jack-o'-lantern, jack-o'-lantern, you are such a pretty sight. As you sit there by the window, looking out at the night. Every year. Shauna teases me because I sometimes bring the jack-o'-lantern with me when I move from one room to another. Leaving it in the living room with no one to enjoy its glow seems like such a waste. I get a similar quiet awe feeling from the lights on our Christmas tree when everyone else has gone to bed. It unfailingly evokes in me the urge to hum, O Tannenbaum. And there's that line in the O Hanukkah song that is an ode to the magical feeling of light in the darkness. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low. It seems to me that these songs are all born of the quiet awe inspired by light in darkness. If you too are drawn to light in darkness, I invite you to attend our winter solstice ritual right here in this room this Saturday evening. On this longest night of the year in near darkness, one by one, we walk an evergreen spiral. As each person adds a candle to the spiral, we watch the light grow beckoning the return of the sun. Details are in your order of service. It's for all ages, kids, adults, elders, all of us. And this year we've added a period of just silent candlelight meditation at the end. So you can just sit and take it all in. Life can be hard. For some of us, this time of year is especially hard. My wish for all of you is that you are able to seek out and find your own moments of awe. Moments in which you experience that paradoxical magic of feeling small, yet also thereby comforted and connected. May you feel the deep calm, the heart opening that comes from letting yourself dissolve a bit in the embrace of the larger whole. For all of us, may the spiritual practice of awe nurture our souls and inspire us to care for one another and for this web of life that holds us all.